Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of Free for All, streaming live right here on Grumblings Media, Thursday nights at 10 p.m. And I got to tell you, I had to get my good friend Hody Johns back on the show. He's right here to my right. I don't know if that's like camera left, but he's here for me. I hope I'm pointing to him the right way. But, you know, Hody is one of these guys we met on, as I guess a lot of people do, Hody, via X interactions, going back and forth initially, reached out, talked a little bit. We've had him. He was kind enough to be a guest on a previous episode of Free for All. And I kind of liked the dude. And I thought, you know, he represents a little bit more of a libertarian perspective than I do, in addition to what I think my perspective is as well. So glad to have him on. We're just going to talk about some libertarian topics of the day. Hody, before we get to that, though, first of all, I'm going to pre-warn people. I just got back from one of the nastiest root canals you could ever have. So if all of a sudden I start making ouchy faces in the middle of this conversation, Hody, I assure you it has nothing to do with you. It's just like all the Novocaine and whatever else the endodontist shot into my face might be wearing off. But other than that, I'm pumped. I'm ready to go. Let's talk. And again, let's let everybody know you can send your questions to us via X, YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, send them in. Last week, we had a lot of interest in our guest, Jake Porter. Hopefully, we'll get the same amount, if not more, deserved interest having Hody and talking about the subjects we're going to talk about. All right, Hody. Listen, man, one of the things I want to talk to you about, because the last time you were on, we kind of touched on this, but I just kind of want to dive into it a little bit. And I'm going to ask you this. Hey, are we happy with how libertarian the incoming Trump administration is seeming to shape up as? Are we there yet, Hody?
No. that's the short answer. Boy, yeah, this is gonna and that's all for today's show, everybody. Thanks. Trump is honestly, I had more hope for his first term than his second one. He seemed like an outsider. I still, of course, at the time had left the Republican Party for the reasons that we discussed, you know, beforehand.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't see any hope there. But, you know, I was like, you know, hey, relative outsider. I remember his Department of Transportation selection had some like libertarian leanings. And I was like, OK, you know, I'll take steps in the right direction here.
Sure.
And I remember after how disastrous that was for liberty. And then that coming into this time, I was like, well, this is literally empirically the biggest liar in the history of American politics, just by volume, right? And of course, it's easier to lie more frequently now because things are more public now, and he's on social media now, of course. So that, of course, helps weight things a little bit. But I honestly still even had a touch of hope this second time, just saying like, hey, maybe, you know, he seemed to voice, oh, you know, I hired the wrong people, as he said. Yeah, I really learned my lesson there. I need to hire the right people. Well, who are the right people? Warmongers, big tax, big spend.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that a little bit, because, sure, you know, I don't want to just throw out these blanket statements necessarily without a little bit of something to sort of shape the conversation, to be fair to all parties involved, because, yeah, he may be a liar, perhaps the biggest liar, but it's not like he's standing himself free and clear of, say, the Biden administration lies or the Kamala Harris campaign lies as well.
Yes.
So let's put it all in context. But here's some things I want to throw out at you. And now I'm talking about Trump's announced positions. Now, after I state them, then we'll talk about whether he, quote, really means them or not, because you hear that a lot, too. So one of the first things right out of the gate, as soon as we're coming close to Inauguration Day, certification of the vote was between the certification vote on the 6th and the 20th this coming Monday. I hear talk about essentially the annexation of Greenland. I hear talk about reclamation of the Panama Canal. I hear talk, for some odd reason, that we need to rename the Gulf of Mexico, the Gulf of the U.S., or the Gulf of America. And again, a lot of this understandably, is pandering to his base that wants to hear the rah-rah, make America great again, be a patriot or be nothing type of thing, right? We get that. But then you get into other things. The tariff on everybody to crazy extents. By the way, I thought between Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, the fake agency known as DOGE, I thought we were supposed to cut down government agencies. We were supposed to eliminate agencies as if they had any power to do so. But now, I thought I'd be promised we get rid of the IRS. Not only are we not getting rid of the IRS, Hody, we're creating a second IRS. It's called the ERS now, the External Revenue Service, because, hey, once you tariff the crap out of everybody and kick off trade wars and spike up inflation 3-4 points on the American people, you got to have somebody with a gun in a cage to collect all that money. So where are we headed? How much of this stuff do you think is real? How much of it is to get his base applauding and cheering and buying all his swag? And how much of it do you think is really what the GOP nowadays really wants to get done out of everything that I just listed?
Yeah, I would say that with half the time of Trump's lies, we should be glad he lied. That is, I don't want to make it sound like all Trump's lies are bad. I'm happy that he breaks many of his promises. He, you know, is oftentimes virtue or vice signals. And so I'm glad that that it was a vice signal, like, and not actual vice. Right. So, yeah, is he preparing for war with Panama, as he says, taking Greenland by force if necessary? He has certainly hired the right people to prepare for that, if that's something he wants to do, which is certainly unsettling. In my casual observer's opinion, I don't think he's going to do it. But there were a lot of people that were like, hey, the war on Ukraine's never going to happen, right? Like, it would be stupid for them to do it. And it happened, you know? And so we sit here. I mean, Biden administration just funded $22 billion alone and boots on the ground for Israel to attack Iran, right? That's, $22 billion, no chump change. In fact, rebuilding the whole Gaza Strip is estimated at $50 billion. So this is something that is certainly within the realm of possibility. And when we have politicians like the ones we have, we don't like very many things being possible to them. So the fact that these things are possibilities are really negative. I believe that he is trying to portray the whole I talk tough. Let's look at something that people might consider a success, but I'm going to shed a little light on it here. The ceasefire in Gaza. First of all of Israel's leadership still in charge. Hamas still in charge on the other side. We talked about the negotiation. Trump said they'll be hell to pay if there's still hostages when he takes inauguration. Only 33 of the 251 hostages are going to be released. They're going to renegotiate again in 16 days. So if Trump is being honest, again, we have to worry about this. He will be starting a war there soon, against Palestine, because not all the prisoners will have been released. And then let's not forget this. People are like, well, Hamas was so scared and that's why they accepted this deal. It's actually Israel we were waiting on, not Hamas. Hamas had agreed to this principal peace deal back in May of 2024, and Hamas was ready to accept this. It was Israel that we were waiting on to accept it. Now, in Trump's defense, he did send an emissary to Israel. And it does appear that I don't know all the details. In fact, the one that's accepted in principle was Biden's deal with a little bit of adjustments there. The one that had been proposed back in 2024. But, you know, if Trump's emissary did indeed help push this through, sure, I'll give him credit for that. You know, that's at least something we can celebrate, at least a ceasefire, even if it's the status quo. The status quo is still very, very bad. This is definitely not a win in anything that's happening, but at least we'll take a temporary. There's not one. I don't know if you knew this. There's not one standing hospital in Palestine anymore in Gaza.
Right.
Like, they are all destroyed. So it's a disaster. We should just be happy that at least the murders have temporarily stopped.
And to your point, if he actually comes through on this stuff, And it comes through diplomacy, largely diplomacy, whether it's talking tough or negotiating, whatever you want to call it. That is a cause for celebration. Did you get the vibe that he was trying to recreate Reagan's 1980 inauguration, where literally we had the Iran hostages returned to us? What was it, the day before Reagan took office, or the day of his taking office? I don't know. I'm old enough, Hody, to have remembered that, and I sort of got that. Yeah. Trump was trying to go for that vibe, like, I'm so tough, they're not even going to wait a day before they start giving in to my demands. And I kind of got that vibe off of him, interestingly enough. But, okay, so to that extent, let's assume that he gets something done, and we give him a little bit of credit for that. To your point, you said it was basically the Biden deal with a few more adjustments or caveats thrown in there. And honestly, when it comes to releasing prisoners, who cares who negotiated it? Let's get it done. I'm happy to give whoever credit, whether it's Trump, Biden, both of them. I couldn't care less. You're absolutely right. But now, what about this? Now, I've seen a lot of Republican supporters, a lot of these MAGA supporters, and surprisingly, Hody, a lot of these libertarian nationalists, the LNC, the right-wing libertarians say, see, this is what's great about our guy Trump, the guy that we elected, that we helped elect. Because he talks tough. He knows how to negotiate. It's the art of the deal. Now we practically have Greenland begging to become our 51st state. He threatened Canada with taking over Canada and making him the 51st state. And the next thing you know, Trudeau is resigning. He's calling for elections. Is it the art of the deal, or is it gunboat diplomacy, Hody? And why are libertarians happy with this? Why are libertarians, supposed libertarians, happy at the annexation or absorption of sovereign nations?
To be as fair as I can to the libertarians who are doing this, I think that what they have in their head is an idea of what the regime is. And even if it's big government, as long as it tears down the regime, that it's going to be a positive. That there is a right-wing backlash. It's not just here in the United States. This is a global situation. Right. For those who have seen it, South America, Africa, Europe, Asia, England, right? Like, we've been seeing this kind of come from all over here, this right-wing backlash. And a lot of it is merited. What we would call liberals or left-leaning folks have overplayed their hand. People are working themselves to death. We may have many advancements, but a lot of that is due to technology. It's not due to politics. I don't think anybody's accrediting Keynesian economics for doing like this great job, right?
Well,
like,
I think some are. That's the problem. Some are, Hody, right? I mean, certain people are.
That's true. I guess, and this is why the left is losing on those positions, right? Like, and I'm saying the left, this is very broad, especially because we're talking globally. But, you know, this global left has overplayed their hand, insisted, and I think one of the biggest failures was told everybody they weren't suffering when we can look around and feel suffering. When people's workplace, when we're all grabbing second jobs, when the average hours to sustain a household is up to about 70 hours now, up from where it was 38 hours just like 40 years ago. You know, like, this is something that people are feeling direly when we're having to double our work times and we're getting less and less luxuries. Small things, advertisements that used to be, you know, make things free. Now it's advertisements in addition to these paid subscriptions, in addition to all these things. It's monopolization. It's consolidation of all these corporations, all of which kind of the left-wing liberals were like, hey, this is actually going to end up being really good for you. So I think what you see with like a libertarians is they mistakenly just kind of say like, you know what? Push back in the opposite direction, blow it all up with a different kind of big government, and at least it's like attacking the cathedral, the regime, the, you know, whatever we want to call it. It's attacking them. Now, this is incredibly short-sighted. This is something that history has told us a lot about. This is definitely not the first time, especially for libertarians and the Libertarian Party in America, this is not our first time selling out for right-wing candidates that we thought were just good because they were pushing against the mainstream.
Right. And you know, yeah. I'm sorry, Hody, but that's an interesting point because, you know, as you know, I get into it with some folks on X over these types of issues. And a lot of people say, like, hey, this has never been tried before. The LNC strategy has never been tried before. And any change is good change. See, my point was, if something's not working, yes, look for change, but don't just any change for the sake of change, right? That's not always good, because if you know a strategy is going to fail, or you have empirical evidence that it's going to fail, why try it again? So, you know, to me, that's just as nuts as saying, let's keep doing the same thing. It's equally nuts, right? So when you say, hey, we've been down this road before as libertarians, selling out our principles for a seat at the table or for scraps off the table, what specifically are you referring to?
Yeah, so it's the paleo movement that I'm talking about 30 years ago. Lou Rockwell yeah. and Murray Rothbard created a pitch for the libertarians to join with paleo conservatives, form a paleo libertarian movement, and try to get certain things done. They have it detailed. I have spent, I was on a show with Jeremiah Harding, who you know as well. Sure. We dissected this point by point, talked about the history of it, and it was over, I guess, total podcast time, probably 20 hours, right? Looking at all the history and everything like sure. this. So there's a lot to discuss there. I'm going to try to boil it down as small as I can. Basically, what it was is we said, look, guys like Pat Buchanan and David Duke are shaking things up. They're outsiders. They're going to make things different. Let's throw our support behind them. How did it end? Well, Rothbard died before he could see the end of it. But Lou Rockwell himself was like, this is a disaster, specifically quoting, hey, we thought Pat Buchanan was our friend. Turns out as soon as he got what he wanted, we caved in on the social issues. He forgot all about all those economic promises that he made us, right? Like, so we successfully sold out. The libertarians did successfully sold out. You can see a lot of that effect still here today. One of the things that he wanted to go over against was like Burrhouse architecture, certain types of artistry, like didn't like painting nudes and that kind of thing. And you'll actually see today when we have parental advisories, there is big government control over architecture still today because the libertarians sold out back then. And we empowered them to do that. And we just thought, yeah, it's selling out a little architecture. What were libertarians supposed to get in return? The abolition of the IRS, no more income tax, the end of the Federal Reserve. None of those things happened, right?
Not even close. Not even close to happen.
They've expanded, right? Like right. All these things are bigger, right? They just wanted us to cave in so that they got their victories. Once they got their victories, they just let us be, right? Like, and would we occasionally get like a small win that you could argue here and there? Sure, like freeing Ross Ulbricht, right? There were equivalents of those things back then. And libertarians were like, hey, this is at least something. But what was for sale when we sold our souls? Taxation, bigger government, more control over the infrastructure, things that have decimated thousands, millions, billions of lives to this day because we were willing to sell out. And it's something that I see again today. Now, Angela, I asked this specifically to Angela in a show she was on. She blocked me ages ago. Before I even like spoke up against her, she blocked me because I am socially, you know, progressive. I'm economically conservative. And so obviously that, you know, she was like, well, you know, I'm conservative, so I got to block him. But I caught her on a podcast, was able to ask her a question. Right. I was like, this, we've done this before. And her argument was in the past, the Libertarian Party encouraged people to leave the Libertarian Party and join the Republicans. What's different this time? She wants to maintain that Libertarian identity, say, we're the Libertarians, we're only selling out this time, but we'll still have a very strong Libertarian Party. Well, if she's aiming to make that different, she has not seen the numbers going on. She has not seen the credit card debt. She has not seen the death of, the amount of memberships that we've lost, the money that we've lost. Trump stuck us with the bill, and for some reason we sold out for him anyway, even though he apparently lied to them. But now I have to even question who's being dishonest here.
Right.
invite Trump to speak at that convention and he stuck us with the bill, you know, against, you know, what we were saying? And if so, why would we have sold out for him after that point when we knew he was right. dishonest and didn't care for us? You right. know, and then if we agreed to that, then our own leadership is lying to us. Somebody's lying. Yeah. both are very suspect. right. I don't know. But dishonesty happening one way or another, why would I be part of a movement that is so dishonest?
And honestly, last time you said that, hey, when I was in a role as a Republican strategist and outreach and all that, I knew I was lying to smaller third parties yeah. like the Libertarians, like the Greens, like whatever. Right. We had, you know, as a Republican, you said we had no intention of honoring any of this. You know, it was just to get your vote for right now. I would also have to question, if you're really trying to get seats at the tables, why wouldn't you, like, the theoretically, the Trump victory was more assured than the Harris victory. Okay. If you thought you could affect some swing states, why wouldn't you go for the minority party? And because they are more beholden to you, right? They have more to gain. One would think you'd be cutting deals with the Democrats. Not that I don't think you should cut the deal with anybody. Right. But in this particular instance, perhaps you should have cut a deal with the Harris people. Interestingly, or be like RFK, just put it up for sale and then see who gives you the best deal. You know, people, you know, the MAHA people, which I hate that acronym, but fair enough. The MAHA people seem to think like, oh, RFK had some sort of integrity by selecting Trump because he knew Trump would be the right guy. No, Trump was like third on his list. First, he came to the Libertarians. Then he went to the Democrats again. Then he ended up with Trump. So for people who think that RFK had some sort of integrity in joining Trump, no, that's not the case. And as we outlined last week, if you're a Libertarian who supported the RFK JFC, the Joint Fundraising Committee, you ended up putting money in Trump's pocket to help with Trump's legal bills and his campaign bills. So you're already right. It's unraveling already. Now, to the extent, Hody, that the LNC and Angela McCarter are claiming like they've had this outsized influence on Trump, his nominees for his cabinet, the policy positions he's staking out. Let's look at some of those as well. We already outlined some of the things Trump is saying, which I think, again, if you have like 100 Libertarians, random sampling, now I'm not talking about the LNC, what, like maybe 20 might agree with these positions? You know, like the annexation of lands, gunboat diplomacy, tariffs, adding more, another Department of Taxation. Trying to cancel H-1B visas or you know, the mass forced deportation of undocumented immigrants and things of that nature. So you've got that, but then even then, like, okay, RFK, like, again, Mike Termott, and if you haven't caught Mike Termott on Liberty Lens with me once a week, please do. Our first episode, Mike said, you know, Big John, you know, Hegseth, RFK, Tulsi Gabbard, Cash Patel, let's give them a chance. Let's wait to see. This was last week. Let's wait to see. Give them 6 months. Give them 7-8 months to see how they're going to react, because they are disruptors. They're not run-of-the-mill nominees for these cabinet seats. But we're already seeing stuff. RFK is promising to ban certain things. Tulsi Gabbard, 3 days ago, has all of a sudden reversed herself on FISA 702. She's now in support of it. She's willing to support it. Whereas a congresswoman, as a Democratic congresswoman, she voted against it. So what's happening here, Hody? Is it Trump pulling the strings saying like, no, support it? Or is it that once they get in the position of being confirmed, they're like, hey, guess what? This political power is still a little too intoxicating. Or do you think it's some sort of ruse? Like, do you think Tulsi Gabbard's going to say, I just said that to get nominated and confirmed. But once I'm in that seat, yeah, I'm against it. But the law is still there. What's your feeling on that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of both. power tends to corrupt. I do think that there is when you go to the White House and they brief you, right, you realize how a Gordian knot, right? Like, to undo it, the only way to do it is to cut it up. Right. So it's great to dream. It's easy as a libertarian to say something like, we need to end all wheat subsidies. Okay.
Right.
I totally agree. Right. Like, and yeah, absolutely, that should be front and forward in libertarian messaging. Doing that, much more complicated. Right. Like, very easy to get rid of the subsidies for mom and pop ones, but the ones that go out to, you know, over half of our subsidies, I got this from like Reason, have the last, are owned by farms. Agricultural subsidies go out over half of them have the last name of Turner or Rockefeller, right? Like, rich people, right, own these farms, right? Those subsidies are tied up in a bunch of different laws. Look at something like the Inflation Reduction Act, right? The reason drug companies have monopolies over every drug that is even invented in America going forward is because of the Inflation Reduction Act. So all of a sudden, you're not just saying we need to break up these monopolies. You have to go to the Inflation Reduction Act and start taking that apart, right? Now, it's a worthwhile cause, right? Like, for me, I'm like, yes, let's undo this Gordian knot. If you're an anarchist like myself, you just say, let's cut it up. Let's start again, right? Like, let's do something else. Right. If you're a minarchist, Godspeed, respect to you. Let's start untying what's, yes, tied, right? Like right, we need to get on this. And so I think that what happens is you get briefed and you just say, look at all these complicated things. Elon Musk undoubtedly looked at all the wasteful spending, saw half of it went to him and goes, well, I'm not sure if I can spend, I can axe $2 trillion of it anymore. That's going to my people, right? That's going to my stuff. Even if it's not going directly to him, it's right, going, well, to people he does business with. That helps, right, keep, well, him, you know.
And you already saw that a little bit because, you know, up until he announced his support for H-1B, he was a MAGA darling. Literally, the vipers turned on each other. It was a snake pit, right? The second he said, I support this, oh my God, he sold out Trump. Hey, he better watch out because he's next. If he doesn't fall back in line. And then you had Vivek Ramaswamy literally being caught in the middle, right? He's, yep, sort of like, well, I kind of know how important this is as like a businessman, even a shady one at that. And but I know the value of that. But at the same time, I also understand what the mob is saying right now. So it is that sort of thing that when you get into that sort of position of, hey, I could. I've always liked someone like a Larry Sharp, who when he was running for government, I asked him those questions. I said, okay, you know, how do we get rid of the Department of Ed? How do we get rid of public schools? How do we do this, this, and this? And he said, Big John, you're not going to get it done in our lifetimes, period. But here's something we could do. Let's make them self-sufficient. Let's give people choice, at least. If you want to send your kid to a crappy public school, great. Have the money. If you're going to not get rid of all subsidies, at least have the money follow the kids. You know, like a little bit of the Corey DeAngelis thing, you know, or the Milton Friedman school choice type of voucher type of thing, right? Is it the ideal situation? No. But at the same time, you could still have libertarians be your North Star. Be like, hey, this is where we want to get. This is what's correct. You know, like I said, I'm not an anarchist, but I respect you guys because you're like, here's what we believe and here's what we should strive for. Here's the ideal, even if we can never actually achieve it. Sometimes the glory and the honor is in the chase. It's in the actual pursuit as opposed to getting there, right? Because we know we may not get there, right? So that to me is what's concerning, as I'm sure it is to you, Hody. It's that once the Libertarian Party loses that, who advocates for these ideals? Who advocates for this enlightened state that we want to reach, right? Because Free Ross Ulbricht, great, but is that a compromise? No, it's not. It's like us sticking to our guns. Is he the next one to fall by the wayside in the next deal that comes along? And again, weighing all things, right? It is a human life. He probably shouldn't be locked up. But is he worth tariffs? Is he worth 3 inflation points? You know, and again, I hate to reduce it to that sort of math, right? Because it is a human being.
Right.
But I'm also struggling to understand why is it that Ross is a human being, but the people who came here looking to earn a living and just didn't cross through Ellis Island all of a sudden are less than human beings. So that's what I'm struggling with, Hody, as I'm sure you are. How do you feel the Libertarian Party is right now? Because there is this battle, right? For those, for our viewers out there, it's sort of building on last week's theme, but I think it's very important. Up until the next election for the LNC, where McArdle's seat is up for election again, do you feel the Libertarian Party is making strides in trying to reclaim what it was or what it should be? Or do you feel it's that schism is actually deepening and is actually becoming more of a hard line right now where the libertarian nationalists, the right-wing libertarians, I'm even loath to say the anarchists, because I don't think all anarchists, like yourself, for example, have these ridiculous notions. So I'm just going to leave it as libertarian nationalists. They've identified themselves as such, and the right-wing libertarians. Do you feel that that schism between them and everybody else in the Libertarian Party, is that hardening? Is it deepening? Or do you feel that there's some effort towards a fusion? Do you feel there's some effort or progress towards reconciliation of some sort? Do you feel that one faction or the other is going to say, hey, I'm done. I can't deal with the other ones, you know, just as the way I can't deal with Democrats in the same way that, say, I can't deal with socialists or communists, I can't deal with these, like, either right-wingers or these prags, depending on your point of view.
Yeah, one of the issues that we have is that Mises Caucus is still the protagonist. They're the main character in all of this. There has not emerged a secondary character. The CLC, I love those guys. But
I'm sorry, but for the audience, CLC is the Classical Liberal Caucus, correct?
Correct, yeah, the Classical Liberal Caucus. And I know Layla, the new, I actually am great friends with both Jonathan and Layla, both before they were even the chair of this caucus, right? So, but, you know, that transfer in leadership has kind of made people go, the Classical Liberal Caucus themselves lost half their people to Project Liberal, who ended up, I don't want to say all of them, but mostly kind of went to the Kamala Harris defense, right? You saw a right. lot of them defending, you know, the Joshua Eagle ended up going full Kamala Harris, right? Like real Bill Weld stuff, right? Just full on embarrassing. And so that was unfortunate. And so they kind of have had a divide. You've got the radicals, but the radicals, you know, themselves, you know, get a little compromised because then a lot of people, as you noted, anarchists, radicals, kind of got sold into this nationalism thing, did the opposite of being radical about our values. We're like, what do I think achieves radicalism? Maybe selling out right now and then getting late term radicalism later. It'll be the first time in the history of government that's ever worked, but they're really counting on a first time here. And as you noted, you know, to back up on what you said, again, nothing demeaning to Ross Ulbricht. Man deserves to be free. And I think, unfortunately, left libertarians and prags do themselves a disservice because they're so anti-LPMC that they will disparage Ross Ulbricht, say, who cares? It doesn't matter. No, of course it matters. As soon as individual lives fail to matter to us, we've lost our focus on individuals. Right. Like, and we are individualists, right? We believe in the sanctity of every human life, not just humanity, every individual life. But the issue that we have is, what do we trade for it? Donald Trump is over here pushing not only mandatory minimums, higher mandatory minimums than what Biden had, but the death sentence to future drug dealers and people that try to do what Ross Ulbricht did. So we trade Ross in, and as much as you value his life, we trade in countless, like, literally countless millions, I don't know, other lives in order to get that deal. That's something big government, they'll take that deal any day of the week, right? Like, I fully expect Trump to pardon Ross Ulbricht, right? Like, even just for the sake of pretending to keep his alliance alive with the right. libertarians, despite how often he's lied to us already and how many promises he's broken. I fully expect him to do it because that's a trade. You want somebody, you want that carrot on the stick. You want the Libertarian Party thinking they could do this again, right? Like, let's get another political prisoner free. And all we have to do is sacrifice a few million unknown people. You know, unfortunately, there's not really a compromise with the LPMC, right? But they are the best organized still. They have the most members still. And unfortunately, they are fully willing to kind of believe whatever they want to believe. One of their planks is that they would never engage in the culture war, right? Like, wave a white flag, I think it said, on the culture
war. Right.
In a month of taking over, Angela McArdle said, it's all about the culture war. 100%. Like, everything we're going to do is about the culture war. How many of their members that were like, wait a minute, I got involved because we were going to wave a white flag and not do culture war. And now all we want to do is the Confederate side of the culture war. That's not what I signed up for, right? Like, but the thing is, if you're still in the LPMC past that point, okay, that wasn't a deal breaker for you. Well, then Trump, you know, saying he wants to execute drug dealers, probably not a deal breaker for you. As soon as they said, remember how they hyped up Trump is like, he's the one president who didn't start a war and he's going to be great. He increased civilian casualties by 330%. We're going to sweep that under the rug. But at least he didn't start any other official wars. You know, that's something. And then as soon as he starts declaring all these wars, and as soon as he ushers in this cabinet full of war hawks, what do they change to? Hey, I didn't have a lot of hope for him when it comes to foreign policy anyway. I knew he was another war hawk. It's domestic policy that I actually cared about. Right. They just lied to our faces, right? Either they lied before and they didn't know he was, or they knew he was a war hawk, or they're lying now and they're just saying they always knew he was a war hawk, right? Like, pick your lie, but one way or another, they're lying to us.
Right. And you could see also, I think, from, you know, you could tell a lot from a person, not so much by what they affirm, but what they, but how they disparage and what they disparage. Right. So like, if you engage with these hardcore Mises, now, again, not all Mises caucus people, and a lot and libertarians of good conscience who were part of the Mises caucus, like I'm thinking of Karen Ann, I'm thinking of the head of the, I think, Georgia MC that I can't remember the gentleman's name. Like, as soon as this stuff happened, they were like, we're out. We're gone. You know, we're either unaffiliated with any caucus or, you know, we're standing up. We don't believe in this. And to give them their due, they're still, they describe themselves as Mises people, but they're just not on board with this nationalist nonsense. And what's interesting here is when you see how they disparage other people, what are the first ad hominems they get to? Like, say, with Adrian Maligon, or McArdle herself, or their closely associated orbit, like a lot of the Jeremy Kaufmans and people like that. What's the first slur they hurl at you? They call you a fag. They'll call you gay. They'll call you a pedo. They'll call you, whatever, Gruner. Whatever, right?
Yeah,
rumor and stuff like that, right? So to them, clearly, it's not, hey, we're ignoring the culture war. That's not even close to being true, because if that were the case, the slur wouldn't be coming back to you that you're a groomer, wouldn't be coming back to you that you're a homosexual or a pedophile, right? Like, those are all cultural issues, because there's already laws in place for statutory rape. There's already laws in place that prevent adults in engaging in sexual escapades with minors, right? We get that. No one is pro that. Or I should say, nobody that anybody takes any seriously is pro that. But for them to frame their battle lines, their front lines on the call, like, I've yet to see any of them come up and say, attack me over my economic stances. Like, no one's come to say, are you a Chicago school, Austrian school? No, not one person has come to argue that. As a matter of fact, if you kind of wait around long enough, they agree with the tariffs. They agree with the restriction of immigration of workers, services, and products, right? They agree with all that. They'll go along with that because they think it gets them their culture war victories. So much like a good Orwellian novel, Hody, I don't know if you agree with me, the doublespeak is strong with them. Now, even within politics, I think the doublespeak is strong with them. I mean, I don't know. Do you think I'm over associating Orwellian doublespeak to the Mises guys right now?
No, not at all. A book that I would recommend, whether you're in the LPMC or have friends in the LPMC, is Combating Cult Mind Control by Stephen Hassan. Now, it's going to sound like an exaggeration. Whenever you say somebody's in a cult, what do we think of cults? We think of sacrificing goats and pentagrams and Scientology and, you know, big conspiracies and celebrities and
orgies. Let's not forget the orgies. Right. Always part of a good cult is an orgy.
I know. And you know what? That might be one way they could rope me in. Unfortunately, sure. We're lacking that a little bit, right? Because they're so uptight sexually. You know, unless it's Jeremy Kaufman and a 16-year-old boy, but, you know, whatever.
Whoa.
Oh, no. What have I done?
Let me just say this for everybody's sake. Allegedly.
Well, no, he didn't actually. He said it. He did not actually do it. Him saying it is not controversial. He said it.
Okay.
Anyway.
I just wanted to make sure we're clear on that.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, that is a good point. I'm not alleging that any of them actually did that, except for, like, you know, Tom Woods grooming his wife, and you got Scott Ritter, right? Like, it's funny because they're so wood chipper until they're one of their own people does something that would put them in the wood chipper. And then it's like, well, they're Catholic. Oh, well, maybe they just forgot the age of their wife. And, oh, you know, he said she was really grown up for her age. Things that would totally get you thrown in the wood chipper if you said this one of the so-called loser brigade, right? But anyway, combat and cult mind control. Listen, a lot of jobs behave as cults, churches, families. Huh. Right. Like, if you read this and you read kind of tactics that people use in cults, you're going to see a lot of it. And you don't necessarily need to label it all as a cult. In fact, that's actually one of the worst things you can do to get somebody out of a cult is tell them they're in a cult right away. Right. They get on the defensive. Sure. It becomes hostile. This is one of the reasons I recommend the book so much, is it helps kind of see that programming. Why do they fall for that doublespeak? Why is it they're willing to go along with these things? What's really going on? And the way that you talk to them. I think the issue, Big John, is we're so used to talking in matters of principles as libertarians, and we've lost the art of talking about character, right? To get somebody out of a cult, one of the best things you could do is be like, hey, you know, 5 years ago, tell me about, like, your hobbies and stuff, right? Like really connect with them. This is a Daryl Davis strategy. The KKK is one of the most alarming cults of them all. How do you get people out of this? Become human to them. Talk with them. You don't need to talk about their principles all the time. Talk about character. Talk about fun things. Talk about sports teams. Dungeons and Dragons. Bob Barker did more for, like, humanity for pets, right? Like, when we talk about, like, being humane, by hosting this fun game show, and at the very end, just throwing out a couple seconds, hey, make sure to spay and neuter your dogs and cats. What if Bob Barker instead did 2 minutes or 2 seconds of game show and 29 minutes and, you know, 58 or 29 minutes and 58 seconds of lecturing about why it's important to spay and neuter your dog? Nothing, right? One of the best things we can do as libertarian is plug into people's character, culture. We need to stay having fun, right? Like, this needs to be a fun, happy movement. We look at this, I'm a strong Christian, right? And right now, what I am doing is I am plugged deeply into faith, right? I love first Christians. That's my work. I've left politics behind me, and I'm focused on culture right now. And what happens is when people get embedded into policy, you become Pharisees. Jesus mentions this over and over. When you plug into people and who they are and their needs and what heals them, that's when you're really free. There's a prayer in Matthew that Jesus prays where he says, "Thank you for obscuring the truth, God, from the wise and the cunning and the crafty." And instead, who gets the truth? The simple, the stupid, the childlike, the people who don't know everything. And the more you look into this, the more it becomes true. What you'll happen is as we look throughout history, Big John, and we see some of these wise thinkers, you always find them defending slavery or anti-Semitism or genocide or siding with some warmonger. And you go, what happened? I thought I liked your principles, but you became such a policy wonk that you forgot to become a person wonk. And this world operates on people and not policy.
And it's funny, you mentioned the person's name while you were talking, and I want to make sure that we don't overlook that. You mentioned Daryl Davis, right? Was that the
Daryl Davis, yeah.
Daryl Davis. Yep. Now, for those that may not, correct me if I'm wrong, he's a black gentleman who's basically spent his life converting or getting guys out of the Klan, like actual Klan members who are already part of the organization, getting them out. And he's always done it by outreach, just talking to them. He was featured, I think, on one of Joe Rogan's episodes where he was just saying, hey, like, I talked to this guy, and I'd be like, and, you know, they'd start out with the N-bombs and the, like, whites are superior, you know, sort of like what you hear coming out of New Hampshire these days. But, you know, but then he would just talk to them and get to know them. Like, in my own experience, I remember, like, my mother was born in Greece. So they still have the remnants. And at her age, my mother's 84, you know, she still has the remnants of that old Greek-Turk conflict. And for those that don't know, that's very similar, say, to the Brits and the Irish, or the Japanese and the Chinese. You know, it's one of these supposed, you know, seemingly eternal conflicts, right? To the point where she wouldn't use Turkish products. If she saw something that said made in Turkey, no matter what it was, she wouldn't buy it or anything like that. Well, what got her to change, to get over that after 50, 60 years? It was that the doctor that helped her grandson happened to be Turkish. And that is what broke down her biases. It wasn't any sort of reason. It wasn't any sort of logical argument. It was the, to your point, placing humanity around it, putting a face to what your bias may have created. And, you know, so whenever she gets in the mood again, saying, oh, those Turks or whatever, it's like she'll stop and think. But it was one of the people that I think I should hate that actually did the greatest service for me. And I think, to your point, that's what we need to do. And it doesn't have to be anything that dramatic. It could be something as simple as understanding how to speak to people on their terms, right? I still maintain one of the worst things that happened during COVID, aside from anything else you might think, is that what we exposed is that scientists cannot talk to non-scientists. When you see them try to explain their position, they're not being crafty. They're not being duplicitous. They're not lying to you. They just don't know how to communicate to someone who doesn't have the shared experience of spending 10,000 hours to become the subject matter expert on a particular topic. So when you put them in the box and say, explain how mRNA vaccines work, they're like, what do you mean? You mean you don't know it as well as I do? How do you expect me to take 20 years of knowledge and learning and experience and distill it into that 30-second news bite, or to go on Rogan and deal with professional polemicists and argue with them about it, right? To me, that's one of the greatest failings that we had to learn the hard way. It's like, you can't, there's a reason why they're all introverts, right, Hody? Like, the typical personality trait of a true scientist, they're introverts. They don't deal with other people very well. Computer programmers, the so-called nerds that you always see in movies, right? Hey, guilty as charged, by the way. Always have trouble communicating to those that are not in their field. So I agree with you. But what happens when the pendulum swings too much to the other way? When you have people who can connect viscerally with other people on shared pain, but they don't intertwine them with the correct principles, right? Because I think that is part of what makes the Mises Caucus so strong amongst libertarians, right? I think they connect with people's experiences, right? They'll say, look at the crime in the major cities. Look at what the economic ramifications are of immigration, both legal and illegal immigration. Look at all the jobs that H-1B visas are taking away from Americans. I was shocked to find out that they seem to think that libertarians are for ending birthright citizenship, that we're somehow against it. And that somehow made its way to the LP website, right? Now leadership claimed it was a mistake, it was an error, that it wasn't meant to be there, you know. But I think Jeremiah, that you mentioned earlier, Jeremiah Harding, was one of the folks that picked it out and said, when did the Libertarian Party all of a sudden become like anti-birthright citizenship, right? So, but very clearly, those folks have understood how to tap into, and to give the devil his due, that's a very Trumpian quality, right? To understand your pain on a very emotional level and then manipulate that to the political sphere to what you want to get accomplished, right? Whether there is a natural bridge or connection there. So do you think right now, I understand what you said, hey, we have to learn how to connect with people again. But do you feel it's also the case that the pendulum, especially when it comes to folks in the Mises Caucus, might be here? They're very well, or if it's Heiss, it's Heiss, I'm not sure. Whoever architected their messaging is very in tune with that. They did learn from Trump and Bannon and whoever else it was. Was it Patrick Byrne, whoever else is in the formation in there, supposedly. Do you feel that's the case, that to them the principles really don't matter, or they matter to themselves, but they don't expose them to others?
That it's hard to say. You know, I think one of the things that we maybe do ourselves a disservice on is when we get too far away from Daryl Davis and we treat everybody in that group as a collective.
Right.
You know, when Daryl Davis got people out of the KKK, he didn't get 20 people at a time. He got one out at a time. He sat down with one guy. It would be at like a blues or a jazz club, right? And talk with him. And then, hey, want to come to my son's graduation party, right? Like these things would happen, you know? And you say, how much am I? Most of us are brave enough, thanks to social media, confronting somebody for a bad position. How many of us are brave enough to get to know somebody, right? And that's really the challenge that we have here. I don't believe that Michael Heiss or even Bannon or Trump or anything, I think they're taking advantage of these trends, but I don't think any of them are trendsetters. I think that it's been around since a long time. You mentioned people feel like I lost my job and I saw an immigrant take it, right?
Right.
How many young men right now? Huge division in America right now between men and women, especially young men and young women. Back when I was growing up, it was like 55% male conservative, 45% female conservative. Now it's like 75%, you know, young men conservative to like 20% female conservative. Like it's an unbelievable divide. And you look at how like many men are incels right now. This was always a problem a little bit, but you know, with men like, you know, sexually frustrated men taking out their anger on other people, it's become an epidemic, right? Like this is really something that psychologically is going to affect things going forward. Well, it's really easy to condemn their facts and figures, right? Their whole like, oh, when, you know, women have sex, their vagina expands and they're not, you know, they're used anymore, right?
Like they cause earthquakes. That's what I've heard too. Like,
right. I mean, you'll even mainstream like, podcasters and stuff talking about how like the female orgasm is just a myth, and you're just like, you know how embarrassing that is for yourself. It's so easy to go after these men on facts, right? Because they're just wrong. That they don't have the men in their circles because of facts, right? They don't have them there. That's not why. What happens is if you're a young man and you have a bad dating experience and you go to your friends and you're just like, man, I went on the date with this girl and she got like a lot of expensive stuff. And I wasn't even expecting like sex or anything like that. But you know, she said she had a good time. Now she's not even taking my calls anymore. Right. And I'm just trying to vent, right? Like I haven't said anything. She didn't owe me anything. It's just upsetting. And I need a place to talk about it. If you do this on a college campus, it's going to be, what do? You're disgusting. I'm sure that you did something terrible. Oh, what? She's supposed to go on a second date with you? She has to return your calls just because you bought her a steak? How poor are you? How ugly are you? How are this? When you get that tidal wave of backlash just for sharing your feelings, what is literal physics, right? Since we're talking about how hard it is for scientists to explain things, let's talk about this from a social phenomenon. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. If I get this tidal wave telling me that I'm the problem and all I did was I was a gent, I tried to be nice, I tried to be kind, right? And so I push back. And what does that cause me to do? It caused me to say a bunch of inaccurate things. Women are all to blame for this. Every woman's like this girl. They all take men for granted. None of them value hard work. All of that, you know, and so what you have here is that they don't agree, like that everybody knows it's a lie. Daryl Davis went in when he talked to the KKK members. Most of them knew they were using false facts and figures. What made it okay for them to use those false facts and figures is because of the hurt that they had felt.
Right.
They had a community with people that shared that hurt. And so part of what Daryl Davis does is spend like very little time talking about these policies and most of his time giving people a way out, right? Like here's a new community. One of the problems that I see and the reason that I feel the LPMC stays as powerful as they are, the Mises Caucus, is because when it comes to say, hey, will you welcome these people in if they want out, if they say things have gone too far? The common answer is no. They've showed that they can't be trusted. They betrayed us. They betrayed their values. They betrayed. Listen, all these things may be true, but we're not going to get to the solution by simply burning these people to death. They're going to stay in their community of falsehoods if the community of truth rejects them and won't accept them. I'm not saying that we have to take them in outright. We can acknowledge the faults and the mistakes that they made, but what, like with Christianity, I'm seeking to convert people. I'm not saying you need to have always been perfect. What I do is I put them on a program. There's a lot of stages in between pastor and parishioner, right? Like there's a guy who's just attending there and a lot of stages in between. What happened to a missionary program with people where you say, listen, I'm still not perfect on these things. Okay, great. Talk with these people. Hey, I'm still messing up these ways. Churches welcome you to talk about your sin with them and then talk about how to get better from them.
Right.
When we
right.
have an LPMC who said, I talked with two people live who talked about one of Michael Heiss's lies that they backed up at the time. Right. I did this live on a podcast and they knew it was a lie. They went along with it. They regret it. From what I understand, Karen Ann Harlow's deep regrets about the lies that she backed up, deep cult programming for her,
right?
Like, and you see her like kind of repentance process. Now she's been accepted because she's blowing the lid off of a lot of, you know, what they're doing. But a lot of people that are going to come to us aren't in a position of power. They're just people.
Right.
And we need to be able to say like, hey, I understand. Tell me more about the feelings that brought you into the LPMC. Let's figure out how we can heal those damages while making it so you don't have to fall for liars like who are in that group. I don't see that from any LPMC backlash. And unfortunately, until we get something like that, they're going to continue being the main characters in this party.
They do offer, like you said, cult, but whatever group offers the disenfranchised, like we understand you and we'll take you the way you are. And that, to your point, is what makes them strong in the sense that the people who have remained are the ones that are the most loyal, the hardest of the hardcore. And they're going to be someone to deal with, which is why I asked, like, you know, is the Libertarian Party potentially headed to either be, because look, you've seen a lot of people already say, I don't want to have anything to do with this. I don't want to be cast in with the racists, the bigots, you know, whether the bigotry is based on race or sexuality or whatever. Yep. I'd rather go to Project Liberal, you know, with Echol and those guys, or I'd rather, you know, maybe I could find the Constitution Party a more suitable home or whatever, you know. And it's a shame to throw out the baby with the bathwater, but is that where we're heading? Just give me a quick answer to that. Do you feel that's where we're heading, or can the LP be saved, so to speak?
I think that just with the eternal nature of time, I think it will turn around eventually. We've cycled. So the paleo movement isn't the first time that we tried. When Lou Rockwell actually talks about 30 years ago when the Libertarians also sold out, similarly, as Rockwell noted then, to disastrous results. And he tried to tweak it for the paleo movement. Once again, we've tried to tweak it again, right? So we keep cycling back to government, right? Now, this is the problem when you have a political party. Have to make compromises, right? Sure. I worked on the Chase campaign. As an anarchist, I disagree with Chase on several issues, right? Like important issues. This isn't like a small disagreement. Like I'm like, man, I really don't like your stance on this. I really don't like the way you're selling this kind of thing. But we accept that there's like compromises that we got to make to move in the direction of liberty. And so we're going to keep getting tied in this cycle so long as we keep intertwining ourselves with them. You know, the more we deal with politics, the Libertarian Party has had some huge wins. Even if not electorally, if not for the Libertarian Party, we're not talking about gay marriage. We're not talking about drug legalization. We're not talking about some of these wars getting shut down. The Libertarian Party was instrumental because people knew that they had to embrace the right position if they were even going to lure a couple of us in that direction, right? So even if it's virtue signaling, hey, if we have to do the right thing, that's great. I think the Libertarian Party can and should be a force for good. The nice part about the last time with the paleo movement is they burned out quickly. I mean, within 2 years of taking over, they burned out. And that was because they set goals, they failed those goals and it was very obvious. What I worry about this time is you're going to see Ross Ulbricht probably be released by the time we talk next week, Big John. He will probably be free. And you're going to see the Libertarian Party, they sold out for Trump and they got Trump. And hey, we got Tulsi Gabbard and we got Kennedy and we got, you know, they're going to be able to claim victories. Unlike last time where they, you know, I guess Pat Buchanan was a bit of a win or whatever, but right. He sold out very quickly and you could tell that things were going south very quickly. At the moment, they're so engaged with disinformation that I think they're going to take all this as a win. Yeah. Already you see people say, "Well, the Libertarian Party has never been more relevant." That is embarrassingly untrue. It has never been less relevant, you know, and it's, and so I think that I think we're going to stick with this a little longer than we would like to. I do think eventually it will cycle out, but we have to worry about what's going to happen again in another 30 years. You know, do we want to build up a political party, pour in all this resources and time? The time that was what led me out of the Libertarian Party. My time with the kitchen and the cabinet that I have here in my community, in my neighborhood, I've seen more people come to God and liberty through these things, just showing up and volunteering. And a couple hours every month is all it takes to see meaningful differences. I could sink 500 hours in the Libertarian Party and see nothing, right? Like no discernible difference. I could sink $1,000, $5,000 for that lifetime membership in the Libertarian Party. And what? They're still underwater, right? Like, it's all going to credit card debt. And it is now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It is now. But what's interesting is I agree with you, but to some extent, hopefully we all do our part because I think the idea of a Libertarian Party is still relevant. I just don't know about the actual political arm of it. So to the extent that I'm going to do my part here to make sure that wins are not counted as losses and losses are not counted as wins, let me say this. Do you think that Kingmaker Angela McArdle, as I think she likes to refer to herself, do you think it was she who convinced Donald Trump to influence or command Speaker Mike Johnson to remove Thomas Massie, the only probably true libertarian left in Congress from the Rules Committee? B, do you feel it was her choice not to go to Trump's inauguration and instead hold an inauguration party in some rundown bar in D.C.? Is this what you would think is the itinerary of a kingmaker?
I don't believe Angela has. I believe Trump got what he wanted out of her, and I think she has had no sway since then. She talks a lot about being in Trump's ear and influencing his decisions. But she mentions, even according to her, Kennedy was not the libertarian we wanted, right? But hey, he still technically counts or whatever. But here's, I think she's lying. I'll just be frank. I don't think she has Trump's ear at all. I think she got a photo op with him where they had steak and ketchup and Diet Coke in nice wine glasses, according to the picture. I hope your well-done steak was great, but I think that's all you're going to get from him. And I think Ross Ulbricht's another great example. Angela McArdle has said both these things. One is that she's the one who convinced him. Also, he was going to release Ross in his first term, but the papers got slow walked before he left office. Well, which
both
is
can't be, yeah, both can't both, be true at the same time.
Right. She's lying. We just have to determine which lie she's telling. Right. And she's done this about so many things. I mean, Jake, really, that you had last week has been keeping track of.
Right.
He does so much better job than this. Me, I'm blocked by her and I'm happily blocked. I don't see much of what she says unless it's like such an egregious lie that somebody crops it and shares the images.
So
I still keep in touch with her in those ways, you know, because I do see that happening. But, you know, I really don't believe that she has Trump's ear at all. I think it's a non-factor. I think that Trump knew he wanted more spending. That you bring up another good example with Johnson. The one moment I had, it was an entire evening where I thought this is actually the first hope I have for Trump, was when he was like, hey, let's reject this new spending deal. And I was like, oh my gosh, he might take Doge seriously. Yeah. Right. This is going to be great. I woke up the next morning. And it turns out he wanted a bigger spending deal, which he then got approved, you know, through Speaker Johnson and everything. And the guy who stood against it, Massey, and he's the one getting ganged up against because he was the one Republican who didn't sign on for the bigger spending deal.
It's and by the way, it cost him his committeeship, right? It cost him his seat on the committee. Very clear political retaliation against the guy who showed up at our convention and by all accounts is the most libertarian congressperson in the House, right?
And think about this, Big John. Yeah. Think about this. That what is the point now of DOGE if we have an approved spending deal that is greater than what we're currently spending that goes for the next 2 years, right? Like DOGE, if they find all this stuff, it doesn't matter. Oh, we're locked into this spending, right? We've locked into this new, bigger budget. Trump could find all that he wants. You know, Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy could find a ton of stuff, but none of it matters now because he's locked into creating that bigger spending government. Oh, shoot.
Yeah. Oh, man, if only we hadn't done that. But here's the thing, right? I mean, DOGE was always a publicity stunt. It was never like maybe I'm being way too cynical, Hody. Not for one second that I consider this to be a real thing. I think maybe Musk, maybe Vivek Ramaswamy thought it would be real. And I actually don't think Vivek ever did. I think Vivek just realized he's become a good enough politician where he understands how to take advantage of stuff. I think Elon, being still more of a scientist than a politician or an engineer than a politician, said, hey, maybe if we do put together this think tank of sorts, give it a nice name and yeah, we'll point stuff out and then we'll shame people on X into actually following through on it. Well, we saw where that went the second it was like, hey, wait a second. You're not supporting American workers. You're not supporting cutting off this H-1B stream of non-whites coming into the country. Well, we're against you all of a sudden. So DOGE to me, to your point, was nothing more than a publicity stunt, which by the way, McCardle has duplicated, right? Because now she's quote unquote launched DOGE, local DOGE initiatives, right? The Libertarian Party has. But it was funny because I did read her press release. I want to end it on this, Hody, just to wrap it all up. In her press release about her inauguration party, it says McCardle also highlighted the event as a reflection of the Libertarian Party's growing influence within the new administration. She pointed to the appointment of a, quote, Libertarian Party lifetime member to a cabinet position and claims that dozens of libertarians are under consideration for federal roles aimed at reducing government size. She also noted progress with the party's local DOGE initiative, a project launched in December mirroring the federal effort headed by Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk, which has already been implemented in one Colorado town. So first of all, it's hilarious to me because this is just word salad that has no actual tangible effect on anything, right? She couldn't even bring up the courage to name the person that was nominated. She just put in her press release a Libertarian Party lifetime member, which of course is RFK. And again, I would challenge anyone, even the people supporting his anti-vax stance and anti-pharma and taking us back to the Stone Age in terms of healthcare, that he's an actual libertarian, right? I doubt we'd find too many people that think he's a libertarian. So to your point, and maybe I'll make that a featured segment every week, Hody. Maybe you can come on every week and we could have a small segment of This Week in McCardle Propaganda or something to that effect, you know, and we could just highlight her propaganda just to keep people aware so they don't fall for it. You know what I'm saying, Hody?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm blocked happily. So I don't see a lot of it. I certainly have connections that will share everything. Right.
Like yeah, we are as well. It's not like she spared us, you know, so absolutely. But Hody, let's wrap up here. I just want to say thank you for joining me tonight. I really appreciate you taking the time. And for those that didn't know, Hody is also a football fan. He jumped on our Blindside Blitz episode this week when I was subbing in for Jimmy McPhee, who went down with the flu. There he goes, Broncos hat. There we go, folks. He is a Broncos fan. You can be proud of your Broncos, Hody. They made a good accounting for themselves, even if they did lose in the wild card weekend. But I could see the future getting brighter for the Broncos. So Hey, Hody, do you have anything you want to promote? A Twitter handle, an X handle, a website, anything at all?
Yeah, you know, you can find me at the Hode Man on X or Twitter. It's THEHODEMAN. The Hode Man, yeah. And I am Hody Johns over on Facebook. The majority where I spend my time is with my online faith-based community, the Love First Christians. It's a Discord group. You can find links to that all over. If you manage to find me, you're going to find videos that I do all the time that are kind of linking over there. We're currently in the middle of a Bible in 1 year read-through, and it's great because we got a lot of new, brand-new Christians. When we kind of unveiled ourselves last year, had a lot of curious minds, a lot of non-Christians get involved and you know, they're going through the Bible for the first time. And I think between them, as well as kind of experts that have difficult questions about the Bible, it's a cool process to read through kind of these stories with them and talk about it from both a high level and low level perspective, right? Like new person, expert, they kind of have the similar questions a lot of the time, right? And so so we're doing a Bible in 1 year. We are 4% done with the Bible currently, so you are not at all too late to join. I think it takes about 2 hours of Bible reading to actually catch up to where we're at.
Okay.
You know, so for those who are interested in that, you can find that. Other than that, I occasionally commentate. I look forward to being here. So you should catch me on maybe Thursday evenings on the free for all. That would be great. I'm with the We're Libertarians Network. Those shows are whenever we have time to do them. I'm on with Jeremiah Harding, and Insanity Is Free, I believe is his.
Yes, at Insanity Is Free. Yeah. I'm going to see if I could get Jeremy on the show as well. I've reached out to him. We just need to iron out him coming on, finding a time that suits him. Love to have to talk to Jeremy. He certainly is someone that I follow him on X as well. I think he, if nothing else, he puts up some interesting stuff. And he's not in the business of blocking anybody, to my knowledge. He engages with people, whether it's angrily or not. He will.
He's not subtle.
He's not subtle. But Jeremiah will engage with you, so that's good on him. Okay, everybody, thank you once again for joining us right here on the Free For All at Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. Also, keep an eye out for some of our other great content. As I mentioned before, we have a new feature every week with Mike Termott, the former VP nominee in 2024 for the LP. He joins me on Liberty Lens every week. Catch us for that, where he just tells us about the interesting points of the week from a libertarian perspective of interest to libertarians of all stripes. Also, check out our conservative show. If you're more of the McCardle gang and you think you belong in the Republican Party, check out my partner William Del Pilar Friday night's live stream on Grumblings Media. Fired up, and we've got a ton of other great stuff too. We have our football show, Blindside Blitz, our basketball show, Buzzer Beaters, and we also have a pop culture show, Red, White, and Rude. We've got Points on the Board, Sports and Politics, sort of like an Outkick type of thing. But hey, if you think someone might be talking about it, come to grumblingsmedia.com. Until next time, Hody, once again, thank you. Catch us right here. Peace, everyone.